goodness faces.
Thank you very much. Where is this? Microphone. I'm very happy that my talk is coming right now, because apparently there are many questions that people have asked, and I, in these 15 short minutes, I think I can answer all of the questions from the audience. So today I will talk about, well, the basic topic of my talk is what happens to these rare regions in a metallic host, where when we take into account the long-range nature of the RKKY interactions between the rare events. This work is done with my longtime collaborator Eduardo Miranda, and I have a fantastic student that is just finishing now. Who is looking for a job. So if you like the talk, take this into account. Okay, so I have three different parts of the talk, which are try to make as short as possible, but I would like to hear the questions after each part, because there may be a lot of confusion if I don't do that. So one thing that we heard about is that there are rare disorder configurations that can play a very important role near quantum phase transitions, and in particular correlated systems, and they can lead to this kind of Griffith's phase. Now, one of the questions that I would like to address is that, can we actually think of these rare regions as completely independent or not? And in this respect, they can play a very important role in terms of changing Fermi-liquid behavior. This is in particularly important for metals. But I would like to address the question, how different this is from the insulating Griffith's phases that are now pretty well understood. And in fact, there are a number of materials that show some non-Fermi liquid behavior people believe comes from disorder. One of them is there are these Kondo alloys. You have the Kondo effect, and Kondo temperature is exponential in per control parameter, so you can expect disorder to be very important in this kind of system. And indeed, many of these Kondo alloys, they show, for example, logarithmic deviation or increase of the Sommerfeld coefficient, linear resistivity, and the dynamical scattering time also seems to be linear. So those are all deviations from Fermi liquid behavior. What's interesting is that those persist up to the lowest temperatures within the metallic phase, and so they are not apparently necessarily tied down to the vicinity of any kind of magnetic order. But like, what I would like to point out is that in many of these systems, this is rather weak anomaly. So this is close to marginal. This is not a very strong singularity, either logarithmic or with very small power over here. There's another class of material, and those are these doped semiconductors. But in them, near the metal insulator transition, so as we crank up the disorder, there is a similar behavior with diverging susceptibility and specific heat. And this has been studied a long time ago. But I would like to point out that these are much stronger anomalies with pretty large power, something like 0.7 up here. So this is actually upside down, but never mind. So those are the two classes of systems. And to try to understand at least the first class, very early on they proposed that maybe there are, in these Kondo systems, there are distribution of Kondo temperatures. And if you pick by hand a particular phenomenological distribution, they're able to actually fit some of the experiments pretty successfully in a number of different experimental probes. Of course, the question was whether do I understand what's going on or not. But at that time, it wasn't clear. Another picture was that you have these rare islands that Thomas just talked about, and the conduction electrons can flip the magnetization of these islands. This can also, it has been argued, this can also give you a power law distribution of local energy scales and maybe a quantum Griffith's phase. So those were the phenomenological proposals. And here are some open questions which you may want to address. What microscopical model can give you this? Why is this so universal? There are actually a number of systems that give you this kind of phenomenology, but you know, how broad this is, and is this a property of a critical point or not? Are these regions independent or not? In this talk, as I said, I would like to try to address what's the role of the long-range nature of the RKKY interaction, and in particular, this seems to shed light to the question why in some systems you see strong and in others weak deviations from Fermi liquid theory. So this is what I wanted to say about these experiments. I think Greg is going to talk a lot more about this in detail. But right now, if there are no questions about this part, I can move on to work that we have done to try to understand the distribution of quantum temperatures in a model which is sort of a conventional model for these heavy fermions, just taking into account that quantum temperatures can be random. And now what we focused on is the fact that the quantum temperature depends on the local density of states, but this depends on the wave functions of the electron, and it has to...
I have a question.
Yes. Okay.
How does one filter out all of these different scenarios for disorder? One has data. How does one know which one is the right disorder and the victim?
Right. Well, I actually have some arguments why I personally feel that the magnetic cluster scenario is not very realistic. But maybe I can say a few words about this later. For example, you know, you can look at how much entropy versus susceptibility you can get, and what the dissipation does to these islands. So there are arguments like this. Ultimately, if you can get power law distributions from both models, they are very hard to distinguish. And it turns out, so at the early stage of the disorder quantum model, we didn't know what the distribution was. But to be short, you see, if you have distribution of quantum temperatures, this creates changes basically in joint wave functions. And you have to study this self-consistently, which we have done on finite coordination lattices. And what we found, here are the results for the distribution function. We found, surprisingly, that the distributions are rather universal. You always get power laws, but the power is tunable, just like in a standard Griffith's phase. So tunable power, but we always have power laws. It doesn't depend on the form of disorder we throw in. So at that level, it looks very much similar to the magnetic Griffith's phase. Of course, one of the problems is that as you crank up the disorder, this power rapidly drops. And in fact, we can show that this power becomes that this power goes to zero at the metal-insulator transition if the disorder is large enough. So at this point, it seems that this is what we call the electronic Griffith's phase. You have a distribution function for local energy scales, and the power rapidly drops. The problem with that is that it seems too hard to reconcile with experimental fact that in many systems, power are very weak. And so this exponent alpha that I've shown you, instead of going to zero, it seems close to one as a robust feature. So this seems very hard to understand, and this was the motivation for much of the work that we have done. And so this is where we stand in respect to the Pierce's question. The disorder quantum model, the magnetic Griffith's phase model, they both give you power law distribution of energy scales, and so you cannot distinguish at that level, yes. But then I won't be able to say anything, but I can.
Now, the idea of 15 minutes is not to give a 30-minute talk in 15 minutes. It's to summarize the most important things that we
okay.
have discussed
about. Okay. All right. Okay. I'll go slow. Well, let me say what I consider is most important thing here is this is just, I naturally speak that way.
He's going to make pauses between the sentences. Each sentence is quick, and then it's...
Right. So... the reason why we can get some very large anomalies here, large divergence, is because you have a lot of centers which have a very low energy scale. And so as soon as you lower the temperature sufficiently, then there will be, or a sufficiently high temperature, there will be some of them which are not screened and are essentially free spins. The same problem applies to the magnetic Griffith's phase, where you have these clusters which are essentially free above some temperature. And so they give a very large contribution to thermodynamic quantities. But obviously, this picture where you think of these as totally independent, therefore giving rise to a large contribution, this is not a realistic picture because we know that in the metallic systems, we have a long-range RKKY interaction. And so what we would like to do is to actually build a model where we can put this Griffith's phase, but at the same time, address the question, what happens to the RKKY interaction? And as I said, the origin of the Griffith's phase we have actually done through computer simulations in finite dimensions, but then we have come up with actually analytical argument, I don't have time to go into these details, and found an infinite range model that can be exactly solved, which has the Griffith's phase without RKKY interactions, and then we can put the RKKY interactions as well and solve this model and address what these interactions do. And within this kind of theory, which is similar to mode coupling theory, or dynamical mean field theory, there is a retarded interaction between spin fluctuations at time tau and tau prime. And this chi, the kernel, is nothing but the average of the local spin susceptibility over all the spins. So this model, the action that we can study in this dynamical mean field theory, is nothing but the Bose-Fermi quantum model that Kevin Ingerson talked about. And this describes the interaction of the local moment not only with conduction electrons, but also with the bath of bosonic excitations coming from the environment. Now, this model, as we heard, has actually an interesting feature, and that's the feature that when you turn on sufficiently large RKKY interactions, and if the bosonic bath has a non-ohmic form, has an exponent epsilon measuring deviation from ohmic, Then there are two phases of this model, and there is a phase where you can destroy the Kondo effect and the spins can be completely decoupled from the conduction electrons. This is, I think, partially answers the question that Ted has, can we integrate out the conduction electrons? In this case, obviously, we have something where we describe this kind of decoupling. It's very similar mechanism to, I think, what Subir talked about, this fraction expansion, where the local moments and the conduction electron, they break apart. So this is a quantum phase transition that can take place. Now, what's the difference in the Griffiths phase and in the clean case is that we have a continuous distribution of these Kondo couplings. So if we have such a phase, or if we have a non-ohmic bath, then some of the sites will automatically decouple, and the Kondo effect will be destroyed. And, we can immediately get a picture what is the difference if we have a Griffiths phase. And in short, let me just put it this way. In a Griffiths phase, you have a power law distribution of energy scales. So you have a qualitatively different energetics. And as a result of this, the distribution function is power. And when you average over the distribution, you generate a new power law frequency dependence, which has an non-ohmic form. So if we consider infinitesimally weak RQQY interaction in a Griffiths phase, then we immediately concluded that this mechanism could destroy the Kondo effect on a finite fraction of spins. Of course, this is just to tell you that the Fermi-liquid phase is unstable in this model. But we have done, in fact, the self-consistent calculation where we have calculated self-consistently the form of this bosonic bath, and we find epsilon is equal to 1, or a marginal Fermi-liquid solution. It's very similar to the Sajdev and Yee solution for the insulating magnets. So what our conclusion is that so many spins actually decouple. But this happens only past a certain strength of disorder, when the bare Griffiths exponent is large enough. And however, the remaining spins, which remain Kondo screen, they have actually a universal form of the distribution. So this is interesting, is before we had a tunable exponent, which depended on disorder. Now, actually, because of RQQY interaction and the additional self-consistency, there is universality is in some sense restored. This was qualitative words. We have analytical arguments to show how these exponents work out. But in fact, we have calculated, we have numerically solved these equations in the large n limit, where you get a self-consistent set of integral equations. You can solve them by FFT methods. And this is what my student has done. And here are some typical results. So this is the dynamical susceptibility as a function of the semi-log scale. And for weak enough disorder, it has a Fermi-liquid form. Past a certain critical value of disorder, W critical here in these units 0.1, you get, it looks linear here. In other words, you have a log omega or log T marginal Fermi-liquid form, which persists in this entire phase over here. You can also ask a question, well, if these spins decouple, what happens to them at low temperature? This is a very similar question to what I think Thomas was addressing. When you have clusters that stop tunneling, basically these spins where this Kondo effect is destroyed, they stop tunneling up and down. And what happens to them? Well, you can do the calculation. And in fact, you can write down a criterion for spin glass freezing of these decoupled spins. And you find that whenever they decouple, this phase over here is actually unstable to spin glass ordering at a very low temperature. However, this happens at extremely low temperature. And turns out there's a very broad window where we find the spin liquid solution, which has a marginal Fermi liquid form. Of course, at high temperatures, when the temperature scale is higher than the scale of the RQQY interactions, we go back to the original Griffiths phase picture. So, No. This is an infinite range model. I'm saying this is similar. In the infinite range model, there is another infinite range model that corresponds to these clusters, which we have studied also. But this is just the Anderson lattice model with Gaussian distribution of random site energies and spin glass interactions between spins. So this is a very specific. That's right. This is a question. Sorry? Well, I mean, this is already glassy, and we believe that this is indeed what happens. Now, I would like to say that's what's interesting, what we can analytically show, that the fraction of these decoupled spins goes exponentially down at this critical point, and so does the spin glass transition temperature. So this is a very strange, odd type of critical point here. It's not exactly like what you'd expect. There are no power laws in its vicinity, and basically no precursor to this phase transition here. So we conclude that there is a universal behavior restored because of these RKKO interactions, and so this is, I think, offers a hope that we can understand the two general classes of disorder-driven non-fermi liquid behavior. So here is a summary of my talk. We have seen that this electronic Griffiths phase, where we have power law distributions, this is a very generic phenomenon. It is found actually under some lattice or Hubbard models whenever we have strong correlations and throwing the disorder. We have looked at what happens when we throw in the RKKO interactions, and we find that very generically, within the Griffiths phase, we find that we get non-ohmic dissipation, and that type of dissipation is very efficient in fact, destroying the coherence and destroying the Kondo effect on so many spins. There's a finite fraction of spins that decouples, basically drops out, and I think actually it would be interesting if they did the whole measurements, because that would actually reduce the Fermi surface just like they predict in the clean case. We find universal behavior in this limit, and in fact, in partial answer to someone's question, I think Subir's question, very similar arguments can be used for the cluster Griffiths phase, magnetic Griffiths phase. We have another paper here with Eduardo Miranda on this problem, where you can use a sort of Landau-Ginzburg type version of the theory describing these clusters, but the same basic conclusion happens, is that within this Griffiths phase, there is non-ohmic dissipation happening, and that tunneling can stop very generally, if this theory is correct, not only for the Ising class, but also for the Heisenberg and Rosati class. So it's a very generic feature where this phase transition would be rounded, and in fact, after you destroy uniform ordering, there should be, I think, very generically a spin glass phase. Of course, you know, this you may think it's limited to this type of mode coupling or self-consistent theory, and technically, how this theory could break down would be that if you allow for the possibility for the collective modes to develop Anderson localization. This is something that, of course, is not included in this theory, but I think we can actually think about this in the future and then see how this kind of non-ohmic dissipation and its effects can break down if we, for example, turn off the long-range interactions. I personally believe that this may be the answer for the doped semiconductors, where we are so close to the metal is so poor that the long-range part is not important, and then I think essentially the random singlet phase of Button-Lee takes over, and we have very different physics. So this is pretty much what I wanted to say, and I will leave you with this idea that there may be actually a very small spin glass phase at very low temperatures, but this could be much lower than the temperature interval in which we see some spin liquid behavior. This is something very similar to what, for example, uranium, copper, palladium seems to look like. There has been some very recent experimental work showing that maybe below a Kelvin or maybe in the millikelvin range, there are indications that there is some spin glass dynamics taking place. But a broad window above this seems to have some kind of marginal Fermi liquid behavior. So stop here, and thank you very much.
Okay, now we're going to not just questions, but we're going to try and open a general discussion if we can on this subject. So bear that in mind as you ask some questions. John.
I'm slightly puzzled about a couple of things. Many of the properties that you're describing follow from assuming a uniform distribution of two-level systems. That is giving you that. That model has all these properties.
For example.
Now, what we knew from the 1970s was that phenomenologically that model works also for spin glasses.
Uh-huh.
That is from the point of view of experiment.
Right.
So I am a little puzzled that you have a separate spin glass phase and a separate phase which is behaving as if there are localized two-level systems.
Well, these are not really two-level systems. These are just, you know, in this model, these are just Kondo spins. And, you know, now what...
If you keep the Kondo spin, make it, you isingize it, it becomes...
Yes, of course.
A cluster.
Now, you know, another question comes to mind related to...
Do you have localized or delocalized excitations in that region?
Over here?
Yes, in that range.
Well, you know, you gradually, as you, if you have a broad distribution of quantum temperatures, they gradually become decoherent, and above the local quantum temperatures, they act like essentially classical spins, right, as you know. So now, the one interesting question that was motivation for our work was how generally are these distribution functions? The only, you know, once you have a distribution function, well, you can calculate everything. And the question is, you know, how robust are these distributions? For example, what we have done is to take a binary distribution for disorder. But if we do it in the finite coordination lattice, actually, as it turns out, the renormalized distribution is always very simple and parallel. Now, how collective are the excitations and how localized they are? Okay, this is something that in a mean field theory, in a simple theory without RQQO interaction, cannot really be addressed. And this is one reason why we have put in the RQQO interaction, because obviously, you know, if you have a local spin excitation, if it's interacting with a long range interaction with someone else, then this is going to delocalize it, right? And now, of course, we have then seen that once we put these interactions, then the physics changes quite a bit. And in fact, I think the spin liquid behavior, which has a universal form in this entire range, this is a result of this delocalization that you would like to suggest, right?
Can I ask a question, actually?
Yes.
What experimental results motivate this phase diagram?
Well,
could you give us a specific example?
Yes, I mean, these examples, I listed them in the beginning. There are two classes of systems. One is, for example, uranium, copper, palladium. And here are the experimental results. There are a number of other results that I have not written down, magnetoresistance, dynamic neutron scattering, NMR, etc. So there is a rather consistent marginal Fermi liquid behavior found in these materials and some of these other materials listed here. In fact, there is a very long list that Greg Stewart wrote in his review article. This is one class of materials, and the other class of
materials.
No. This is not in the spin glass regime. This is there's a rather broad. For example, this
I was asking about the view graph you had up before with the disorder-induced spin glass behavior.
Right.
System.
Yeah. This is what. So let me go to this phase diagram here. Okay. So you can think of this as this X. Okay. Now, in uranium, copper, palladium, there is a spin glass phase on the right. There is an antiferromagnetic phase on the left, which you can wipe out by doping the system. And then what this suggests is that there is an intermediate range, which is maybe broad, where there is an extremely low temperature spin glass behavior. Maybe it's in the microkelvin range. But above this, there is a broad range where it is not a spin glass, but it shows marginal Fermi liquid behavior. So this would be something similar to, I think, uranium, copper, palladium.
And the Griffiths phase?
The Griffiths phase would be seen above this region. So it actually, there is some disagreement, I think, for example, between Megan Aronson and others, whether it's a log or it's a power 0.3. This may depend on exactly what temperature range you choose. This theory suggests that at low temperature is strictly, as you can see, it's strictly logarithmic linear here, but then as you go to slightly higher temperatures, you cross over to some power law form. So depending on your range, you may actually get somehow slightly different powers, but in the entire region, it's rather weak anomaly.
And where does your silicon dope phosphorus fit in?
Well, the silicon dope phosphorus doesn't fit anywhere here, because my belief is that this is a phase diagram for when you have a long-range RQQO interactions. And I think close to the metal and solar transition in phosphorus and silicon. Well, it's metallic, but it's such a poor metal that I think for all practical purposes, the long-range part of the RQQO is probably extremely weak. And there is another piece of physics that has been early on proposed by Batten Lee, which is the local pairing of singlets. This is one of the things that are obviously missing from, as I said over here, missing from the from this theory is the possibility for formation of local singlets. And I think most people believe is that formation of these local singlets is what really dominates ultimately the low temperature behavior in dope semiconductors.
Can I add a comment on
yes.
We measured the exhaustibility and specific heat some time ago, about 10 years ago, silicon phosphorus across the metal static condition. We found a very good description in terms of the Batten Lee model on the insulating side, because we can measure the exhaustibility, we can measure the specific heat, and there's a direct relation in this model between those. So you can calculate the specific heat from the exhaustibility and vice versa. And once you get across the metal insulating condition, they're very strong deviations. And actually, so high the susceptibility and the specific heat do not match each other anymore. And some of this discrepancy can be can take into account by just assuming a distribution of current temperatures. And the reason why there is a very strong, in that sense, it's promise already is that unlike in the uranium system, you have actually an exponentially varying coupling between the local moments and the conduction electron, because the conduction electron seed itself is homogeneous.
Right.
So you have very strong variation of quantum temperatures. But in that sense, and that was modeled by various people, including yourself, and also by Wilfred Lambert, and there was actually very good agreement.
Well, I mean, in respect to this this exponent alpha, you see, for example, distribution of quantum temperature goes as alpha minus 1. This alpha drops down, and we have actually predicted that it will go to 0 at the transition. So in the vicinity of the transition, you should get a very large parallel divergence, but with a large exponent. And in fact, I think that this was one of the things that were most apparent to me and really were part of the motivation, the fact that in phosphorus silicon, you see a very large anomaly, much, much stronger than in heavy Fermi systems.
Here I get confused when you said this is like the spin boson one. But I mean, your boson is actually a correlation function of the spin, right? So
local correlation.
Yeah. So it's not God given. It's self-consistent.
That's right. It's self-consistent. Yeah.
Yes.
It's a self-consistently determined quantity. So this is, let me tell you, this is the Anderson lattice model. Infinite coordination Anderson lattice model with random archicore interactions of random signs. So this is the simplest metallic spin glass model you can write down. The only difference from this simple metallic spin glass is that you have also random distribution of local energies in the conduction band, and that's apparently sufficient to completely change the physics and give you this Griffiths phase in this model.
Thank you. In
your phase diagram that we were discussing before your conclusions. The temperature dependence of the resistivity, is that always a negative function?
Let me tell you honestly what I know about this. This is something that you can calculate without these RKQI interactions. With the RKQI interactions, we haven't actually done the calculation of the prefactor so far. We can present an argument that the temperature dependence in this regime would be linear. And it goes as follows. Because we have a spin fluid, these spins form a spin fluid, which is gapless, as it turns out, in this model. Then the coupling between the conduction electrons and the spins, or the decoupled spins, actually scales to zero, but it scales to zero in a parallel fashion, as opposed to, I think, the model that Subir described, where there was a gap in the spin-on spectrum. And so it scales to zero, and the fashion by which it scales to zero, that basically the boson amplitude B of omega, scales to zero, from the RG equation, you can calculate how it scales to the exponent, and this is enough to give you the exponent of the resistivity correction. So it's linear. The sign, I think, is non-universal, and I think this we haven't calculated numerically, so I cannot answer the question. I think when the disorder is strong enough, a simplest model will give you a negative sign. So, but we haven't done. Yes.
I just want to make a small point about the spirit formation, which happens in the logic, because an analog would be just in the domain system, you see a transition from pupil to some ideal point. Whenever you see this pairing, goes all the way to the ideal point. It is always interrupted by phase, which is in four different or more than. So you never get this tail going all the way to the ideal point. If then the model is full tail short range, there's nothing wrong there.
Yeah, I was still wondering about the distributor, isn't it? This negative damage coefficient. So in which respect is this marginal for the liquid?
Well, I mean, from this solution, we can get linear resistivity, yeah.
Well, but with a negative coefficient, right? So
yeah, I said, I haven't done this calculation quantitatively explicitly enough. We have done it for the model without the RKQI interaction. Turns out it is negative. Now, what is the numerical value of this coefficient? I think also depends on...
I thought I understood why things are called marginal for liquids, but...
Why is it marginal?
Yeah, what's marginal?
Oh, it's that, you know, that you get a log, for example, you know, in the Fermi liquid theory, it's the same terminology introduced when they talked about cuprates. Instead of constant Pauli susceptibility, instead of a power law divergence or a constant, you have something that's just almost a constant, a log. A log is marginal, power zero. Okay, so it's.
I think one should probably distinguish between models of disorder, right, where the physics simply is that there's a continuous distribution of barrier heights. If you have a continuous distribution of barrier heights, the characteristic time will be the log normal distributed. And that's this chi of omega going as log omega.
Actually, I.
There's a trivial explanation.
No, Chanda, I think this is.
Barriers which are uniform.
If I may respectfully disagree, this is not true.
In
this model.
This should be distinguished from models without disorder, where you have to generate logs from some dynamic reason, and not from distribution of barrier heights.
If I may say this way how you technically get the log here is not the same as in the original Bayer disorder quantum model, which had a simple distribution of quantum temperature. It comes from this Bose-Fermi quantum model, where you have a particular form of the bosonic bath, and then as you solve this model, it has this particular form. So it's a result of a specific type of dissipation. It's not just a distribution of local energy scales. It's actually a completely different mechanism.
More clever distribution of barrier heights.
But it's not as simple as... The point is that this is a collective effect. Okay, this is a collective mode.
It's not really like that. It comes out of the idea that it's low in the distribution.
Well, you know, the moment you large n, you know, the infinite number of coordination, then everything
right
to be effectively clusters of different sizes.
Oh, I have another comment to answer this. You see, the thing is that if you look at local susceptibility coming from different spins, those spins that were all coupled, they all have local different susceptibility, and you will have to worry about their distribution. All the decoupled spins, they have exactly the same local susceptibility, which is a log. Okay, so local susceptibility coming from every spin is a log. Now, I think you're right in the sense that they see somehow a distribution of environments. That's maybe a way to think about the spin glass. But this is not, it's not that the local susceptibility of each spin is different. They are all the same for those for the decoupled fluid. So.
In the beginning you said that you consider a transition not intermagnetically, so there's no magnetic phase transition to close by. Mm-hmm. But then in the conclusions you said that you expect something similar, you found something similar from magnetic clusters.
Well, that was... Right. Well, you know, that was a different, slightly different model. You can repeat the same argument that Thomas has done. In fact, the calculation you did was following their work. They've considered the Heisenberg universality class, and if you just look at a single droplet, you conclude that it is actually sitting at a lower critical dimension. And in that respect, it looks very similar to the insulating Ising transverse model. So you would think maybe there's an infinite randomness fixed point. Now, as it turns out, that if you consider this coupling of these droplets to all these other droplets through this long-range interaction, then you discover that there is actually a non-ohmic dissipative bath, and this bath generates different power law interactions in time. This, as in turn, changes the lower critical dimensionality to make it lower, so the system actually now will again decouple. There will be a dissipative phase transition for these clusters, even for the Heisenberg universality class, if this mode coupling theory is correct.
So that means that you don't have any quantum
purpose behavior. Well, not as it
turns out,
you know, this. It will be smeared, but it will be smeared below a very low temperature scale that depends on the RKQI interactions. The RKQI interactions may be very weak because these clusters are very far from each other.
They will become ordered even at higher temperatures.
No. If we don't put the long-range RKQI interaction, then for the Heisenberg class, Thomas's arguments say that there will be a regular Griffiths phase. Okay. Now I said that if we put the RKQI interactions back, then we find that they will order, they presumably will form a cluster glass state, right. But that could happen perhaps below some very low temperature scale, above which you will still have the magnetic cluster Griffiths phase. Okay, and we actually have an estimate how low is that energy scale in terms of the RKQR interaction strength. So it may be actually experimentally irrelevant to this. It was just a question of principles. You know, how general is this? Because you invoke the lower critical dimension, and you just would like to know, do the quantum critical point exist or they don't? So, yes. Well, yeah, I mean, this is not this number W, it's W times, we have an estimate in this infinite range model, W, the strength of disorder expressing units of the electronic Fermi energy. And so, yes, there is a number which you can, it's a small fraction of the Fermi energy. It's like 10%. I think it's like 10%. So, you know, in some sense, this is an interesting, it brings an interesting question. If the disorder is very large, do you have to be close to Anderson localization or you don't? As it turns out, actually, you can estimate, for example, the mean free path. And you will find that actually the mean free path here is short. Maybe KFL is maybe 10 or 20 or something. This is not a very strongly disordered metal. And in fact, these effects, a disorder-driven NFL is seen in uranium, copper, palladium. For example, you have KFL is something like 5. So this is not as almost localized metal. It's still a metal, but it's not a particularly clean metal. So I think in that sense, these estimates that we have are somewhat consistent with the existing materials. With these heavy fermions that have shown these anomalies. So in general, it seems that in this class of materials, KFL is of the order of 5 to 10. Okay, it's not particular. It's not close to an Anderson transition. And my estimates seem to compatible, you know, with this, the same order of magnitude.
Well, I have a closing question.
Yes.
Can you go back to your open question slide?
Okay. You cannot close when it's open. Okay. I want to close the mail. So go ahead.
Right. So if you had to single out one open question that you felt was particularly pertinent to the issue of disorder and quantum phase positions, what would you say it is?
What I think is the most important open question in this field is what is the role of Anderson localization of the collective mode? This is something that almost no theory has addressed.
On the collective mode associated with development order?
That's right. This is I think, in my personal opinion, the key to the question of Griffith's phase or how powerful is the disorder is the question of localization of the collective mode. Because if you ignore this localization and this kind of theory that we have is valid, but if it comes in, it could be completely wrong, and then infinite randomness fixed point physics, which is completely different, could take over. And I think there is probably a phase transition between the two regimes.
So you mean localization of the bosonic?
Of the bosonic mode. And, you know, well, essentially, you know, if the spin modes are localized, then you have just a local cluster which flips over. This is your proverbial Griffith's phase. But, you know, if your theory doesn't have the ability to describe the localization of the collective mode, then you're spinning the wheels. That's the bottom line.
Great now, and